We're in Matthew 16 today. We are finishing up Matthew 15 also just to tie some loose ends together. But as you notice towards the end of Matthew 15, we have Matthew making more of an attempt to summarize what has just happened in the last 15 chapters. And then restating another time where God, Jesus has compassion and feeds a bunch of people with miraculous powers. He even says, I am unwilling to send them away hungry. This is the second time he's had to make these points, lest they faint on the way, he said. Then, of course, the disciples set the first. This is the thing I got with the disciples. If I find a good thing, I do it to death. And I'm really obnoxious about it. I finally find like a podcast I like. I'm going to listen to all of it in like 2 days. That's how I'm a full tilt kind of guy. If I like a certain food, that's what I'm eating. I'm eating that food for the week. The whole week. Why? Because I don't know, guys. I'll try to figure it out. Yeah, praise God. Thank you, one person. But Jesus does this 2 times. This magic feeding everybody. Okay, so the tone changes now, all right? Matthew gets different and on purpose. So let's watch it. Verse 1, chapter 16. The Pharisees and Sadducees came, and to test him, they asked Jesus to show them a sign from heaven. Okay, so what's a sign? Sign is very simple. It's an outward thing that points to something else and certifies it, verifies, right? So, what would be a really good example of that? Well, frankly, like we do this all the time in our society with signatures, right? Like if I have a check, they won't let me deposit a check unless I sign the back. I have to endorse it. Yes, this is definitely money I want in my account, bank. Why wouldn't, I don't understand that part. If someone's trying to take money out of my account, they don't verify quite as hard. I don't get it, frankly. I wish they would say no to people taking money. But here we go. The sign verifies. And what they're looking for is a signature from heaven. They're looking for a signifier that comes from God. Does that catch you off guard, though? Because it's not like there haven't been signs yet. We had the baptism. We had a lot of feeding of thousands of people. Tons of healings. We had a lot of forgiveness. People's lives have been changed. Interesting that they're even asking for a sign, but then they specify to from heaven, not from you. I mean, you're doing all this other stuff, Jesus. That's all nice, but can we get one of those heaven signs? What are they looking for, actually? I'm not terribly sure. Because what they're saying is, essentially, look, we're scholars, we're authorities. We know how God works. Okay? I've read Exodus. There's no plagues. There's no, where are the frogs? I mean, you're supposed to be, beating up bad guys, showing how vicious, and that's what I think they might be going after. Because that's not what we're getting out of Jesus. But here's his answer. He says, when it is evening, you say, it'll be fair weather, for the sky is red. All right, it's evening. The sky's red. For some reason, these people over there in the Palestinian era, or in Palestine, or in the first century, they see red, and they're like, all right, good weather tomorrow. But however, if it's red in the morning, they say it's stormy, because today the sky is red. So if it's red in the morning and a little cloudy, that's bad weather. So it's good to see red at evening. You know how to read that. That's good weather. But if it's red in the morning, well, that's bad weather. You know how to read that. Jesus is teasing them. He says, you know how to interpret the appearance of the sky, but you cannot interpret the signs of the times. And remember what he's doing with the Sadducees and Pharisees is he's intentionally undermining the perception of their authority. The right that they think they have to credentialize or to certify or to verify Jesus. Again, Jesus he's not a revolutionary because he's king. He is king. He is power. He's not against rulers because he's the ruler. But these guys are insurgents. These guys are usurpers. They want to be in power. It's Jesus' kingdom. They're just stewards. They're just tenements, we're going to find out.
And when Jesus interrogates them, you find out quickly they don't actually even know what they're talking about. So not only do these guys, have they just usurped what should just be Jesus' authority and what should just be Jesus' position, they're questioning him. They don't even know what they're looking for.
They already collected the...
No. So he simply describes, verse 4, he's just describing what's happening. An evil
you want me to put it in?
Seeks for a sign. But no sign will be given to it except the sign of Jonah. And he brought this up before. What was interesting is in the context earlier, the sign of Jonah very clearly meant his death and resurrection after 3 days, or on the third day. But there's also some stuff about Gentiles in there. There's where Jonah preached to the Ninevites, and the Ninevites believed. And Jonah was bitter about it because he wanted the Ninevites to get punished. So there's something going to this. Whatever. But we notice, the thing is, there have been signs, but they're not the signs the Sadducees want. There have been obvious details, but it's not the details the Pharisees are wanting. They want a certain kind of Messiah. They're not getting it. So they think Jesus couldn't possibly be the Messiah. What's the issue? Their expectations. They think they're God. They think they're in charge. They think they're entitled to interrogate Jesus, and if they don't like what they see, then Jesus owes it to them to conform. You get that that's the issue? Check this out. When the disciples reached the other side, so remember, he's sailing across a big lake a lot. So now he's sailing to the other side of this lake, away from these Sadducees. Now the disciples are thinking, oh, we forgot to bring bread. We don't got snacks, we've got our granola bars, whatever. Jesus said to them, wash and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees. So they're like talking about their inventory, because they're humans, and they're thinking about, oh shoot, do we got enough food? Do we got enough food? You guys worried about food? I'm kind of worried about food. Look, if I get a little hungry, I get weird. I'm weird when I'm not hungry. I get extra weird when I'm hungry. So the disciples aren't wrong for this. But so they're thinking about this, and Jesus seems to just blurt out. It sounds like he's thinking about this, the encounter they had with the Pharisees and Sadducees. And so while they're on their way over, they're worried about bread, they're doing their inventory, Jesus says, man, I was thinking about this, Pharisees and Sadducees, y'all need to be careful of their leaven. Don't let the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees become a part of your lives. Now, we're all familiar with leaven is. I don't feel like I have to explain that. But it's a living thing that just kind of eats sugars and parts, you know, carbonation, I guess. I don't know, whatever. But it's good for bread. But Jesus hears them. He knows they're upset. And they say, wait. Is he talking about how we don't have bread? So we're trying to, they have like a leaven they use we're trying to avoid when we go to the store or something? What is he talking about? Literally, Jesus, I guarantee, rolls his eyes. And he uses that word again. Oh, you of little faith. This term of endearment that he uses all the time, where he's just kind of like, oh, you guys. What he remembers, and he kind of pities, that most of us in the world struggle to trust God. Remember that Jesus trusts God with his whole heart. I bet you when he looks at us not trusting God, I bet you he's got a little bit of, oh, I forgot they're dealing with that. Wow, I can't believe they're still letting themselves distrust God. What a wild thing to do. You know? It's kind of like, you know, I have a kid, I have a son, and he has got little things he has to deal with. He's got little habits he has to go through to fall asleep. It's just how kids do. I gotta have my baby. I have to have a 20-minute conversation with my dad. And then a 20-minute conversation with my mom, and then I get to go to bed. And I wish it took a little less than 40 minutes to put my kid to sleep. But it takes that time, you know? But I don't need that. I lay down, I fall asleep. So I watch him go through this thing, and I just kind of pity him. I can't believe he's still dealing with all that. That's kind of tough. But then he questions him. He says, why are you guys talking about bread? You guys are worried about bread? Are you kidding me? Do you not remember the 5 loaves for the 5,000 people? How many baskets you gathered? Not only did I feed all those people, but there was a lot extra. In fact, there were 12. We definitely, the disciples didn't go hungry that day. There were 12 baskets left over. Or the 7 loaves for the 4,000, and how many baskets you gathered. He says, 11, how is it that you failed to understand that I did not speak about bread? Well, he's already told them his faithlessness. If you think that bread literally just magically falls out of the sky, you're not going to spend as much time thinking about it. You'll take it for granted. Jesus is taking bread for granted. Give us this day our daily bread. Now I'm done thinking about it. Now I think about what it means to believe in Jesus. Remember, in Matthew 5 and in 6, his big thing was to say, seek the kingdom of heaven first. Then these things will be added to you. Don't worry about what you will wear. Don't worry about food. Calm down. Relax. God's got you. Why don't you think about important things for a change? So what is he saying? Now that I've said that, now that I've said you need to trust God a little better, do you think you can tackle this again? Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Verse 12, a good moment. Then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of bread, but of the teaching of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Oh, it's a metaphor. Yes, it's a metaphor. Come on. Turn your brains on. Stop worrying about stuff that has nothing to do with anything. Focus on Jesus. I have to say, the most precious resource that we have as a people in this building right now, all of us, the most precious resource we have is your attention span. The only thing anyone wants out of any of you right now is to pay enough attention to an ad, to pay enough attention to some packaging on an advertisement. Your whole life, you can't walk from your bedroom to your car without being bombarded with some sort of visual image, some sort of noise trying to get you to exchange money for a thing. Is that a problem? It's just the way we've put their society. That's what it's like. We have a lot of choices that we can make. And a lot of people want us to make choices a certain way. And so they've thrown a lot of things out there. They've spent a ton of money. And all they want you to do is just to pay attention. But they want you chasing fires. They want you scared. They want you annoyed. They want you going from here to there to there to there, reacting, so that you just buy what they want. But if you took time, sat down, and just put them all out of your head, and sought God, I guarantee you feel less of a need to buy whatever comfort food. I feel like you find a lot less of a need for whatever kind of political messaging. I tell you what, I have about 5 minutes I can give to political messaging every day come the election. Why? Is it because it matters? It matters a lot. I will be voting. I know how I'm going to vote. No, I will not tell you. This is a fun secret. My voice belongs to Jesus. Because when you're in this building, I want you to focus on the one chance we've given to think and focus on Christ. So let's put the anxieties outside and let's think. What is the leaven of the Sadducees and Pharisees? Obviously, it's their teaching, but what is it about their teaching? Well, he's thinking about this because of the sign stuff, isn't it? That was what was just happening. Let's keep going. Verse 13. So Peter's thinking about the leaven. He stopped thinking about bread so much. He's had this walk on water experience. He's had a lot. Now when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, this is far up north, this is more of a Gentile, Roman, Greco-Roman area. But they're kind of on a retreat, gets this deal. He asked his disciples, who do the people say that the Son of Man is? Now Jesus uses, again, he uses this phrase, Son of Man, to refer to himself. And I'll explain why later as we go on. But there's this thing called the Messianic Secret. For some reason, throughout the scriptures of the New Testament, within the Gospels, Jesus didn't want people out in the open calling him Christ. Especially the demons, especially his own disciples. He didn't want them calling him Christ. And it's odd. We're not sure, because isn't that his whole thing? Isn't his whole thing to go out and make sure people know he's the Christ? Well, listen, he says, verse 14, they said, some say John the Baptist. They say you're John the Baptist. Others say Elijah. Others Jeremiah or one of the prophets. And these are all very stock answers. These are good, solid guesses. Who is Jesus? Well, he does prophet stuff. He teaches, he does signs, he does miracles, he heals people. He's probably a prophet. That sounds good. Sure. Any specifics? Well, I know Elijah's supposed to come back after something I can't remember, and then, John the Baptist thing. Yeah, so he's one of those guys, I guess. I don't know. Then Jesus says, all right, so that's what you think all the people are saying. Now he gets serious, and he asks the disciples, he says, but who do you say that I am? Who do you say that I am? Simon Peter replied, you're the Christ. You're the Son of the living God. This is a big deal. No one's just come out and say it yet. There are people who have called him the Son of David, which is messianic, but it's still a little indirect. There are people who have called him Lord, which is just another way of saying sir. People have called him rabbi, they've called him teacher. Some people have worshipped Jesus. They've called him the Son of God. But this full-throated statement by Peter is the first time someone has come out and said, I'm pretty sure you're the promised king of everything. I think you're the one we're waiting for. Just out and says it. And here is Jesus' response. You see, Jesus says, verse 17, Jesus answered, blessed are you, Simon Barjona. Barjona just means son of Jonah. For flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. So Jesus is saying, wow, okay, just out and said it. But I need you to understand, Peter, you didn't come to these conclusions on your own. The Lord God brought you to these ideas. And I tell you, you are Peter. Peter comes from the Greek word, just simply means rock. You are rock. And on this rock, I will build my assembly, church. Are you guys familiar about the history of the word church? It's kind of just this weird, so the Greek word for Lord is kurios. And over thousands of years and through the Germanic language, property belonging to the people who gather under the Lord, kurios, somehow becomes church. So most of the time when we think about church, the reason we think about building stuff, because that's just been like the way we use the word church. But Jesus doesn't use the word church, he uses the word ecclesia. It just means assembly. My gathering of my people. It's the same word that God used to refer to Israel. In Exodus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Leviticus, the assembly, the gathered, my collective people. And so Jesus is saying, Peter, you have confessed who I am correctly. You are dependable. You are reliable. And upon this example of behavior, upon this kind of way of being, that's the starting point of the community I'm founding, is confessing me as the Christ. Then he says some really powerful stuff. The gates of hell shall not prevail against it, this church. Now that could mean quite a few things, and I've heard a lot of different theories, all of them very good, so I can rest assured. It could mean that he's saying that hell as a place of judgment won't be able to prevail against the Christians. It could just be like death itself won't prevail against the assembly. There's all kinds of ways to take it. I'll pick all of them. What Jesus is saying is the church will become a powerful force for good in this world, and absolutely nothing can reverse its power. Nothing can stand in its way. And he says, I will give you the keys of the kingdom, and whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. What is he saying? This church is going to be so important, founded on Peter's confession of Jesus, that I'm going to trust it with heavenly, eternal consequences. The way church interacts with people will have eternal consequences. There is real authority in the church that Christ has given. Real consequences to how we conduct ourselves. A lot of times, we kind of go to church, it's Sunday morning, I forgot about church. All right, let's just go, let's get it done, let's get home. But I think we often forget that when Jesus put the church together, he put together the problem-solving mechanism for the whole world. Do you understand? When he thought, how do I solve the problems of the world? He said, first, salvation secured by my death and resurrection. Eternal hope, sure. But you notice, he didn't go out there preaching. It's just me. It's other guys. It's you, Jesus said. The people who confess me, those are the ones I'm sending. Those are the ones whom I am entrusting the rights to loose and bind what happens in heaven. That's huge, guys. That's a big deal. This isn't just some polite thing we do because we want to be good folk. We do this because Jesus created the church. Don't you see it here? And he started the church. He created the church and founded the church on confessing Jesus as Lord. Verse 20. Except that he strictly charged the disciples to tell no one that he was the Christ. What's going on with that? We'll talk about it later. That doesn't hold anymore. That verse 20, I think it's pretty obvious. We've been kind of out forward about it. Christians have never held in confidence that they believe that Jesus is the Christ. Why would he not just say it? Well, the answer is, they knew he was the Christ, and Peter was right to confess Jesus as the Christ, but Peter did not understand how the Christ saves. What do we do with this? Very simple. And the key is the contrast with the Sadducees and Pharisees. The Sadducees and Pharisees were never satisfied. Never got enough because they were looking for signs that they were looking for. They weren't open, they weren't thoughtful, they weren't receptive, and they certainly didn't ever think they had it wrong. So here comes the Messiah, giving the signs of life and health and wellness, creating and fixing everything. They don't see him. Why? Because he's not the Messiah they wanted. And what do they keep doing? They put the ball in his court. Well, you haven't given us the sign we wanted. Well, I saw you fix the kids' legs or whatever, and I know you fed all those people, and I know your teaching is really beautiful and humble and wonderful and great and stuff, whatever. But like, I don't know, can you make like the rivers blood or something? That would really get me. Do you think Jesus is Lord? Jesus is king. He's doing what he's doing because he feels like it. If the Pharisees, if they don't get it, that's their problem. Any plant that my father did not plant will be uprooted, remember? So here's the question I have for you. As you consider the signs, as you consider the person Jesus, remember, pay attention. Calm down. There's literally nothing in the world more important than you making decisions about who Jesus is. I can't think of anything more important than you can do today or tomorrow or the day after that than to find 10 or 15 minutes, sit still, and think about Jesus. And I mean Jesus. And specifically this claim, is he the Christ? And what is a Christ? And what are we talking about here? Because you can live your whole life and never realize that this wonderful, powerful force of God is in your world. And that's Jesus. And that's his servants, the church. Church is hard. Church is dramatic. Church is messy. People get hurt. And I don't want to be dismissive of that. It's real. It's hurt me. It will hurt me again. It's just how church goes. But I believe in its power. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing. There's a lot of guys busting knuckles on engines. They're not giving up on internal combustion. A lot of guys out there who are sick of repairing combines, it's not like they're going to quit being farmers. It's hard, it's weird, it's tough, but it's important, and it's work, and we have to do it. And a lot of the issue we have at church is we just don't have the discipline to sit and be patient. patient and consider the signs that are already there. So that's my challenge to you. Let me invite you to do so. We'll move to the invitation here, Sheila. Let me challenge you. Find time to think about this man, Jesus, and what it means to call him Messiah. And if, like Peter, you're really ready to join a community that confesses Jesus as the Christ, the promised Savior King, now let me encourage you. He is, but he's wonderful. Jesus goes really hard in Matthew 11, if you need to remind yourselves about what kind of Lord he is. You go to the end of Matthew 11. What's he say? He says, "Come to me, all who are weary, burdened, heavy laden, and I will give you what? Rest." Jesus' goal isn't to dominate you or to secure power from you. He has power. He doesn't need you to give him power. What he wants you to do is to trust him so he can begin to help you. And one last word. Prayer is very simple. Just sit and talk. If your mind wanders, maybe let it wander a little bit, bring it back. All in all, let's move to our invitation. Let's stand up and we'll sing it. We're just going to do 1 and 3. And then we'll move to the Lord's Supper.